Hello, and welcome to the Pennsylvania Department of Corrections podcast, Lockup Lowdown. The goal of this podcast is to provide listeners with information pertaining to all aspects of corrections, one issue or one topic at a time. I'm your host, DOC Communications Director Susan McNaughton. Today we are joined by Classification and Program Manager Jim Stover, who will talk to us about the Quahana Boot Camp. Thank you for joining us, Jim.
Thank you.
And before we actually get started, would you please provide our listeners with a brief background of your corrections employment history?
Sure, I'd be glad to. I started working for the Department of Corrections in June of 2000 as a drug and alcohol treatment specialist here at the boot camp. I got promoted to drug and alcohol treatment supervisor in February 2005. And then in 2007, I promoted to the current position I hold, which is Corrections Classification Program Manager.
Excellent. Thank you for that information.
You're welcome.
So let's get into the nitty-gritty of the Quahana Boot Camp. I'd like to start off by saying that the overall name of the facility is the Quahana Boot Camp, but the facility houses more than just boot camp inmates. It also houses state intermediate punishment inmates. But for the sake of this podcast, we're going to focus on the boot camp component of the facility. So tell us about the boot camp, when it first opened, and where it's located.
Well, the Quahana Boot Camp opened in the fall of 1991 under former Commander John Wirtz. They took their first inmates here in June of 1992, and ever since then we've been approaching almost 10,000 inmates through our program. We're located in Clearfield County, about 50 minutes or so from State College. We're at the very top of the Quahana Mountain in the Quahana Wild Area. We have state game lands all around us, so it's a beautiful environment and a great place to have a facility.
Excellent. And I wanted to also mention the fact that this facility does not have a fence, and is that also partly because of the environment?
That is part of that. I think our wildlife seem to keep everybody contained just appropriately, and I also think it's important to note that through the middle of our facility runs a main highway. So it's a unique challenge for us security-wise and safety-wise, but it's worked really well for 25-plus years. So.
Excellent. I do recall that many years ago there might have been a traffic accident with a group of cadets running around that area, but again, like you said, accidents like that are very few and far between.
Yes, that's for sure.
Okay, so tell us, how many boot camp inmates are there at the boot camp, and actually how many the facility can accommodate at one time? So what your population is and what your capacity is.
Well, currently we're running about 550 on our daily population, but half of that would be SIP inmates and half of it boot camp. So we currently today have about 250 boot camp inmates here, and we can house up to 280.
Okay, so you have room for about 30 more.
Correct.
All right. And what type of individual is eligible for the boot camp, and how has that eligibility changed from the program since the program's inception?
Okay, when the program was originally started in 1992, the legislation that was put in effect has had minimal changes, but the key components are the person has to be age 18 to age 40, and that's one minor change. It used to be 18 to 35 years old. Now it's 18 to 40. The judge has to recommend somebody for boot camp currently. Typically, it's nonviolent crimes, so we have to do a current look at their current charge, so nonviolent offenses, anything murder, rape, serious violent issues aren't eligible for the program. Sex offenders are not eligible for the program. But we also do a 10-year look back, so anybody who's had a crime of any of those calibers in the last 10 years, they're also not eligible for the program. Now, one change that happened when the original legislation came out, it said that they had to have a sentence structure between 2 years on the minimum and 5 years on the maximum, and that has changed now, and it's 3 years or less on their minimum. We don't care about the maximum. So we get lots of questions about, somebody has a, 8-year maximum, are they eligible for the program? The maximum does not have any effect on whether they're eligible or not. It's simply the minimum, and it has to be 3 years or less. The key with that, too, is that can be 3 years on a true minimum or a triple RI minimum.
Okay, and our listeners may not know what triple RI is, so can you spell that out and then just real briefly explain what that is?
Sure. Triple RI is a reduction system through the courts, where if someone has a nonviolent crime and meets the eligibility for that program, they can get a reduction on their minimum sentence. So, for example, you get a 3-year sentence, maybe you get 3 years and 3 months on your minimum sentence, and you're eligible for RRI because you have a nonviolent offense, you don't have any problems, significant issues the court sees, they can make you RRI eligible, which could drop your minimum down now to 3 years or less, and that means you can technically get out of prison earlier.
And that's for actually following the programs and good behavior and everything, but it's not technically like a good time or an earned time like other states call it, but that's what RRI is. Thank you for explaining that.
Sure. The other thing that we're concerned with here at the boot camp as far as eligibility would be escape issues. You know, like you said earlier, we do not have a fence, so because we don't have a fence, escape plays a big part. We don't accept anybody who has had an escape conviction currently or within the past 5 years. They're not eligible for the program. Then once someone meets those basic sentence structures, there's the 2-year within their minimum criteria. So what that means is if someone gets a 3-year or less sentence, they have to do 2 years of that. They have to be within 2 years of their minimum in order to be eligible to start the program. So someone would have to do a year somewhere in the state system, and then they could come to us when they're within 2 years of their minimum. So that's something a lot of people get confused about as well. And I guess I should start off by saying I think one of the primary things to know about the boot camp program is it's a voluntary program, meaning inmates volunteer to do the program, and that means they can also decide they don't want to do the program any longer. And so if that's the case, they can sign out, and in that case, they would simply go back to a regular state correctional institution and finish up the remainder of their sentence.
Okay, thank you. Well, let's actually talk about the process. So you're an inmate, you're sentenced by the judge, you come to the DOC, male inmates come in through the SCI Camp Hill, female inmates come through Muncie. What happens next? So how are they actually evaluated and processed and considered for the boot camp?
Well, there's two ways we get inmates. Typically, most of our inmates come through the diagnostic centers, like you said, Muncie and Camp Hill. So when an inmate gets sentenced, they arrive at Muncie or Camp Hill. The counselors at those facilities look at the situation and determine, do they meet the basic criteria? In other words, is their sentence appropriate for the boot camp, or do they have a 3-year or less minimum? Did the judge recommend them? Is the inmate interested in boot camp? You know, the escape issues, those kind of things. Once that happens, then if the inmate says, yes, I'm interested, then they go through a process where they're looked at by security office, they're looked at by the medical staff, they're looked at by the psychology staff. The things they're looking for, is there any medical history that would make someone ineligible for the boot camp? For example, you have to be seizure-free, I believe it's 9 months from having any seizures to be able to do the boot camp. Mental health issues. You know, we want people, one thing that's important, we've had an issue in the past where people believe when they come to the boot camp they shouldn't stay on their medications. We full-heartedly believe in medically assisted treatment in all aspects, so they should stay on those medications, but we're looking to say, is someone stable? Is it okay for them to be in an environment where they're in a housing unit with 50 males in bunk beds? Are they going to be able to handle the military components of the program? So they get evaluated for that. Then on the security side, they look at things such as, you know, what are the security backgrounds? How well do they adjust to the institution? Do they have a lot of misconducts? And once all of that stuff is gathered up and determined by the counselor, they put it through a vote process using a vote sheet, and that gets routed up to the superintendent, who ultimately says, yes, I'm okay with this person coming to the boot camp. And when that happens from Camp Hill or Muncie, they have the authority to make the decision themselves. The second way we can get inmates would be an inmate who either didn't want to go to the boot camp when they were at Camp Hill or Muncie and changed their mind later, or that 3-year minimum person who has to do a year somewhere else. They'll get sent to another facility within the department, and then those counselors would start to process them as they approach the 2-year mark, or they've made the decision, hey, I want to go to the boot camp now. And it's the exact same process. They go through all of those different criteria, and then they do a vote sheet. Their superintendent says yes, and then that vote sheet gets sent to us here. They get sent to me, and then I route it around through our executive staff here, and ultimately our commander makes a decision to say yes or no on someone coming. And at that point, then we get them transferred here and await to start the program.
Phew. Okay, yeah. Wow. That was interesting. And back to the DCC, like I always wondered, how long does this evaluation process take? So not only are they evaluated just as a state prison inmate as they come in, but then they're also evaluated for actual boot camp consideration. So how long does all of this review take? Because sometimes we get emails from staff and or from family members, sorry, that say, oh, my son's kind of sitting there and I haven't, you know, he's not moving. Why is it taking so long? How long does it normally take?
Well, that's really complicated. And the reason it's complicated is because each case is so individualized. And so, for example, if someone has a medical concern, you know, that would slow their process down because they would want to do all the proper testing to ensure we don't hurt anybody or cause any damage to someone. Mental health situations can slow it down. And probably the thing we see more than anything is if someone has an extensive criminal history, all of that information has to be cleaned up and dealt with. So, for example, we get calls all the time about so-and-so has a detainer, they have a warrant. All of that stuff needs to be cleaned up before they come into our facility because we can't release someone back into the community if that stuff's not resolved. And so we have to get that resolved on the front end because it would be a poor use of resources to bring somebody here and then find out at the very end of the program, we can't release you. You've done everything right, but we can't release you. So I would say on average, you're looking at probably 4 months down at diagnostics. But again, that varies. If somebody has a very minimal criminal history, that process can go a little bit quicker, maybe 2 or 3 months. If someone has a more extensive history, that might last as much as 6 months.
Wow, excellent. Well, thank you for that explanation.
Sure.
So let's talk about the types of inmates that you take then as well. You take both male and female, but I wanted to make it clear to our listeners that they aren't housed together, obviously. So talk about that, and how does having male and female inmates challenge the operation of the boot camp, if at all?
Okay, that is correct. We do have males and females. Currently, we run 5 male housing units at any one time, and then we run 1 female boot camp housing unit. They are housed separately. We actually have our females housed across the road and our males on the main side of the road. But the challenges that it has created over the years, obviously, is, you know, boys and girls together tend to get mischievous and get into some issues. So we have had to develop some very strict security protocols, such as, you know, whenever we move them from groups to groups, there's a timing delay between the males and the females, so they're not walking through the hallways together. We set them in the group. Sometimes we do mix them in groups together because a male and female perspective is really welcomed and can help somebody deal with it. The other side is we are teaching you know, both sexes to be able to work with each other in a professional manner without it turning into some juvenile activities. So, you know, we do that, but we set them a certain way in the class. We keep division between them at times. We feed them at separate times. You know, we do medical lines separately. You know, we house them the same, that they're in the barracks style. We do find that the female inmates respond a little bit different to some of the military components. You know, for example, you know, you might be able to look at a male and you might be able to, you know, address them with, you know, a certain tone or a certain direction in your voice, where with a female, if you do that, you might cause them to become emotional. And, you know, it stirs up a lot of problems with females because they have some, you know, some of them have abuse issues and things from the past. So, you know, we use some different techniques. One of the things that the department created many years ago was WOPAC, which is Women Offenders in Pennsylvania Corrections. And so it talks about different genders and how you have to deal with genders a little bit differently because they see things differently. That's been real advantageous to our staff. We also have to do some things PREA-wise. You know, the Prison Rape Elimination Act, the federal act, has required us to ensure that we have protection, you know, for both sexes from any type of sexual harassment or sexual abuse. You know, the department has a zero tolerance policy, and so, you know, we make sure we take that very serious here at Quihanna. Males and females are both told that interaction between the two of them of any inappropriateness is not tolerated at all. We will remove people immediately for any violations of such. And so holding that strict line has also helped our situation.
Wow, very impressive. So I just had a question. Historically, has the boot camp's use been underutilized? And if so, like, how do you work to educate the judges, the district attorneys, and the public defenders about the program?
Well, that is a great point that you bring up, Susan, and I do believe that that's very accurate. I think we've put a lot of effort. EDS Morse Meal has been very instrumental in helping us grow the facility, and she directed us back in the late 2000s to start putting together some programs and some ideas, and so we've done that. And what we currently do is we had a video made on the boot camp program with the help of the Training Academy, and so we have sent that out to every judge in the state of Pennsylvania and to all the DAs. We also have made some tours in the last couple years. We spent a lot of time dealing with different judges and different DAs, and we're doing more and more. Actually, we're scheduled to go to Berks County in August to put a presentation on for the DAs there about what our program is and what we can offer. And we also are heading to Allegheny County. I believe it's in September. We just finished in April. We were down in Lancaster County and met with those folks and had a really good time with them. And I think, just getting the education out there for them has been instrumental. So that's a big part. The other part we've done is we've made a big push into the institutions. The Major Blake and myself and our records supervisor, we go on the road and we go to these different facilities and we train the staff in how to properly process somebody so that when they get the questions, they know what to do and they realize the process has been streamlined significantly in the last few years, and that enables people to be more comfortable with doing the process. So that's what we're doing, and we're seeing some really good outcomes. We receive a lot of calls from the judicial system asking us questions now. Probably the best thing we did is we went to the judges conference in Hershey last July and did a presentation for those folks, an hour and a half long presentation, and it was well attended. Actually, they told us it was the highest attended presentation of the event. And we made a lot of connections there, and we're able to share our information. So I think we're moving in a good direction, and we're definitely seeing an increase in our population. We actually just opened up 50 extra beds within the last 6 months to start taking on more inmates. So it's moving in the right direction.
Excellent. Boy, that's very impressive. Okay, so let's get into the nitty-gritty of the program itself. How many phases are there in the program, and how do the inmates advance through the phases, and what is a typical day like for the different phases?
All right, so our program is based on cognitive behavioral therapy, so I think that's important to recognize that what we do is we blend treatment and military concepts together. So it's a cognitive approach. We understand that push-ups and sit-ups are not going to change somebody's life, but if you can put discipline in connection with cognitive therapy, with thinking, the mind is where we're going to change people. So most inmates that come in the facility, the family members want to ask me, what's the hardest part about it? And they'll tell you in the very first couple of days, it's the physical component, the push-ups and the sit-ups and all of that. But as time goes on, about 3 months in, every teammate, we call them teammates here, every teammate will actually tell you the same thing, and that is it's the mental component of the program that's the hardest. Like, that's what we tackle. So we do that through using a four-phase approach. Our first phase is orientation phase. It's what the listeners would think of when they think of military. Getting up early, making your bed so you can bounce a quarter off of it, kind of yelling and screaming a little bit, we're going to do push-ups, we're going to do sit-ups, we're going to run here, we're going to run there, we're going to do a lot of things to get the teammate out of their comfort zone, to get them to realize, you're in a new environment, and so things are going to have to change. That's the first few weeks of the program, and then once that happens, we start into the green phase of the program, which is basically trying to teach them there's more to life than self. Okay, you have to get a love for others. You have to understand that we're part of a community in this world, and so our actions interfere with other people's lives, so we want to do positive things. That lasts about 10 or 11 weeks, and then the next phase of the program is the red phase of the program. And in the red phase, we're going from a team approach to start to move towards more of an individualized approach. Okay, so instead of if you as my bunkie decide to talk when you're not supposed to talk in green phase, I'm going to pay for that and so are you. We're all going to do push-ups. We're all going to do sit-ups. But in red phase, I'm going to start paying for my own mistakes. And so it allows somebody to transition into that part. And while they're in green and red phase, they're doing mandatory programming. So it could be violence prevention. It could be batterer's intervention. It could be drug and alcohol programming. It could be mental health programming. We start reentry programming. The day they come in the door, we start with getting them, you know, proper identifications. We teach them about job skills, job interviews. Any inmate who does not already have a high school diploma or a GED goes through our education program. And so I'm very proud to say just in the last 3 years, we've had an increase in our GEDs of over 600%.
Wow.
We've instituted some pretty significant changes. And we are currently, our first quarter of 2019, we already have 38 inmates that have successfully received their GED or CSD, which is the same as a high school diploma at Quahana. So we work really hard with education, and then those who do have an education, they would spend most of their day going through work. We assign them to do work in the kitchen, work out in the landscaping. They might do plumbing, masonry, such things like that. And at the same time, we're going to run them through as many vocational programs as we can get them through. We get most of our inmates get something along the lines of vocational, even if it's just a 10-hour OSHA safety class. So that process is happening through both the green and red phase. And then the final part of the program is the gold phase. And that's the last few weeks of the program where we're preparing somebody to actually parole and go out. I think what most people want to know is the typical day, what does that look like? It looks like you're going to wake up at 5:15 in the morning. You're going to start exercising for an hour. You're going to come back in. You're going to make your bed. You're going to make sure everything's squared away and neat, and everything looks exactly the same as you walk down through a housing unit. Then you're going to go eat breakfast, and as soon as breakfast is over, you're either going to go to work, treatment classes, or education, or a combination of all three of those. You're going to do that till about 4 o'clock. At 4 o'clock, you're going to eat dinner. Of course, you have lunch mixed in the middle there. And then in the evening, we spend the evening time. As the program progresses, you earn free time. So in the beginning, you're going to be doing what we call drill instructor time, which means you're going to be learning how to march, you're going to be learning cadence, you're going to be learning how to make your bed, you're going to be learning, you know, different military concepts, with an amount of time in there possibly to write family or have some communication with your loved ones. And as the program goes on, you earn more and more of that opportunity to have phone calls, opportunities to have visits, very little TV time. We don't do much TV time early in the program. Later in the program, you would earn TV time. You might earn time to go up to the library later in the program. We're big on people earning what they get, because we believe that's a great, you know, you get a lot of pride when you feel good about something like that. And so, you know, then after about 2,100 hours, we have our final count, and then everybody goes to bed at 2,130, which is 9:30 for those of us non-military folks. And at 9:30, they go to sleep and get up the next day, and they do it all over again.
Wow. Whew. Certainly do keep them busy.
We do, absolutely. Downtime is not an issue here.
Wow. All right, so let's talk about graduation then. So after, you know, phase four, the gold phase, there's a graduation. Tell me about the ceremony, who attends it, and why is it important to have the ceremony?
Well, the graduation is one of our favorite parts here for staff and for teammates. You know, staff love it so much so that I've seen on a regular basis that staff will come in on their own time, not getting paid, just to sit in and watch a graduation, which tells you a lot about the staff we have at this facility. But the importance of it, of the graduation, is to be able to show the accomplishments that you've done. I mean, 6 months of hard work, dedication. You know, we invite their loved ones, so anyone that, you know, meets the basic criteria, you know, we ask for them to be a family member or on their visiting list. As long as they're on their visiting list or, you know, a family member, they're able to come in. We usually end up with about 300 guests here, and then we have the staff, and of course we bring the entire boot camp program out, so all 250 inmates are there. And we want the younger folks to see what they can accomplish if they stay with it. And then the way we do this, usually we have special guests that attend as well. We would invite people to come up for that. That's always open for people to come up and see what's going on. But it's so important for the families to see what they've actually accomplished. You know, a lot of these folks have never accomplished anything. You know, when they can stand in front of their family member, not only say, you know, I dealt with this 6 months, get up every day, go really, really hard, don't stop. You know, to sit down in a chair was was a privilege. You know, most of the time, you know, they don't get a lot of rest. They're busy. And then in the same time, I'm picking up my vocational certifications. I'm picking up maybe a GED. I'm picking up work ethics. And you know, when you hear the teammates give a speech, we have one male and one female give a speech from each platoon. When you hear those speeches and just the pride that those folks have from accomplishing that, that alone, I think, is what, you know, helps propel them into the next step of their journey. So it's definitely worth seeing, and it's a really important part of what we do.
I've been to several, and it is very emotional, and it's really something to see. So I definitely recommend, if anybody can go, family members of the cadets, it's definitely worth it. And I think it's kudos to your staff, because I know that, you know, they're not just barking orders at the inmates. They actually, if they tell them to do push-ups, they drop down and do it with them. So it's certainly is a whole team concept up there, and I love it.
Absolutely.
Once the graduation is over, and then that's it, that platoon, they graduate, they leave to go home right then and there, correct? And are they on parole, and if so, for how long?
That is correct. They get an automatic parole by completing the program, and they are on parole, and they stay on parole for the remainder of their sentence. So someone who had a 2-year to 4-year sentence would have to do the, you know, max out at 4 years on parole. They do get scrutinized a little bit harder on parole. They have a little bit more intense parole because they're boot camp. But ultimately, at the end of the day, they get out of jail early, and they do parole rather than doing time inside a correctional facility.
So that leads me to my next question, which is, what are the benefits for eligible inmates to go through this program versus traditional incarceration? And also, is there a cost savings or a proven reduction in recidivism rates for boot camp graduates?
The biggest benefit for the teammates who go through the program is the time saved. You know, for on average, we ran numbers for 2017, 2018, and we cut off approximately 7.5 months off the average inmate stay in corrections. So that's 7.5 months you're out in the community rather than being behind bars. And that leads to the cost savings.
Yikes.
The cost savings for the taxpayers are these people are not, you know, we're not paying for them inside a correctional facility. So the average boot camper saves the taxpayers over $11,000 per boot camp inmate. So, you know, when we look at that, our facility as a whole, when you take SIP and boot camp, you know, we're typically saving the state over $20 million a year in cost savings, with, you know, a part of that being the boot camp and the other part being the SIP. So it's a significant advantage to the taxpayers as well as to the families and the folks that are coming through our program.
Wow, really impressive. Congratulations on that.
Thank you.
Tell me, what happens if somebody flunks out of the boot camp program, and how often do you have that situation happen?
Well, if someone doesn't make it through our program, we average about 80% completion rate right now. So about 20% do not make it through the program. Of course, anyone who understands programming, that's a very good number for us. We're very comfortable with that number. You don't want everybody making it through, because then it's probably a watered-down program, but you don't want it so difficult people aren't taking advantage. So about 20% don't make it, and that includes people who don't make it because of medical issues. That includes people who have detainers or warrants or some kind of legal issue that makes us remove them, and then also those that simply want to quit. That also includes those people who want to sign out, and then it includes the ones we remove. So at the end of the day, what happens is, when we remove somebody for any of those reasons, they go to a regular state correctional institution, and they simply continue with their sentence at that facility. So they would wait to see parole on their minimum and try to process through the parole system.
If somebody opts out, can they later try to get back into it?
They can, actually. We have a couple things going on. The current commander, Commander Natoli, she instituted, because it's her option, if someone completes the program and then comes back to prison, are they able to come back through or not? And they are able to do that. And I know that wasn't quite your question, but I think it's important to mention that, because that was not something we did previously, but she instituted that. And what's interesting is, in her tenure, we've had about 18 people do that. I think it was around 18. And what we noticed was the recidivism rate for those folks that came through the program the second time and successfully completed it, it cut their recidivism rate in half. So they were twice as likely to succeed by coming back through the program. by doing it a second time. So, and then to go back and answer your first question, which was if somebody, you know, jumps out and says, I don't want to do this anymore, can they come back in? They can. Now, what happens is we vote on that again, the same as we would the first time. And sometimes, you know, if they get out because it just wasn't for them and they weren't really a problem here and we thought, hey, this might be a good shot, we'll definitely give them a chance to come back through. But sometimes that doesn't work either. You know, if they were really difficult here and it didn't seem like this was the right fit, because the truth be told, the boot camp is not for every person, then we won't allow them back in. But ultimately, most probably get another chance.
Wow. Well, that's interesting, and that's good.
Yeah.
So do you have any graduate success stories that you can share, like just maybe one or two of your favorite stories?
We get lots of calls and lots of cards from people coming you know, telling us they're doing well. But there's one in particular I thought I'd share with you, and his name is Keith Keys. And Mr. Keys graduated from the boot camp program in 1994, and he was actually in Commander Natoli's platoon back in that day. And he calls her every February, that's his graduation month, and he tells her how he's doing. And we actually brought Mr. Keys back here about a year and a half ago, and he spoke to some platoons, and we're trying to get him to come back and do that again. But, you know, when you see someone that comes through and says, you know, this is what saved my life, that gives you some strong motivation to keep doing what we do.
Wow. Amazing. What a great story. Okay, so is there, what's the one thing that you want listeners to understand about the boot camp that you think maybe people just don't understand?
I think what I want them to realize is, you know, it is a combination of standard incarceration combined with military concepts and cognitive techniques. You know, it's really important for people to understand. And our goal here is not to create soldiers. We're here to create well-rounded citizens. And I think that, you know, if we understand our prison system across the nation, we know that there's a definite problem. You know, it's not working. The system is broken. And we're very fortunate here, I'm sure, as you know, to have, you know, our current administration and executive staff in Harrisburg that run the Department of Corrections, and they're very proactive folks who are making changes, and we're seeing results. But I think what's important to understand is if we don't do something different, standard incarceration is going to continue the same cycle. The boot camp is different, and it's really important to understand that it does work. You know, our recidivism rates show that. Pennsylvania Sentencing Commission has stopped evaluating us because they've recognized after, you know, 15 years of doing the evaluations that it continues to be successful.
Great.
You know, our current numbers, where we run our own statistics just to determine, you know, we take every inmate that graduates here and see if they come back to jail or not. You know, not comparing them to any other group, but just simply, did you come back to prison or did you not? And our most recent numbers are around 35% recidivism rate. So when you take a look at what's happening nationally to, you know, inmates coming back to jail, and you look at the boot camp program, and we're cutting that, you know, almost in half. That's pretty significant, and I think people need to realize that it's hard. The program is hard. It's not easy, but it works, and it instills discipline in people, and we get constant feedback to that point.
Excellent. Again, kudos to you and your staff, because obviously you're definitely doing something right, so congratulations for that.
Thank you, ma'am.
And so we'll end here. I'd just like to thank you for taking time out of your busy schedule to give us the lowdown on the boot camp. And listeners, you can learn more about the Quahana Boot Camp by visiting the DOC's website at www.cor.pa.gov. Under the Facilities drop-down menu, there's a link to the boot camp where you can also view the video that Jim talked about earlier. So that concludes this episode of Lockup Lowdown. Thank you, Jim, and everybody. We'll see you later.